Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Monday, February 24th, 2014. While the world was absorbed in watching the Olympics, there was a coup in Ukraine over the weekend. Yes, goon squads in the streets of Kiev. Goon squads comprised of neo-Nazis, neo-fascists, supported by America's neocons. And Sunday evening, as the Olympics were winding down, I flipped over to ABC for their World News Weekend. And the show is called World News. And they started off with a story about a carbon monoxide poisoning at a restaurant near New York. They talked about severe weather, and, you know, that's understandable. That's what people turn on the television for. And then, about 8 or 10 minutes into the newscast, they finally got to the story of Ukraine. And what is clearly a coup is described as a revolution. And a nasty leader who was elected by the people, and you can question elections in the Ukraine, I can't personally vouch for them. But this elected president was deposed. But the talking points coming from the U.S. government and the Obama administration are that this is a good thing. And it certainly is a poke in the eye at Vladimir Putin, who was riding high because of the Olympics. And, of course, Russia came away with the most medals of every category at the Olympics this year. And there were no terrorist attacks or other major events in Sochi that we know of. There was a heavy police presence, a lot of suppression. Pussy Riot was, what, lashed in public by Cossacks? At any rate, the Olympic Games were offset by these events in Ukraine. And Americans deserve to know the full picture. And you cannot get it from the corporate media. So let me turn first to one of our premier independent American foreign policy analysts, Robert Parry, P-A-R-R-Y. Read his work at the site he owns, consortiumnews.com. And I want to read liberally some quotes from his piece. More than 5 years into his presidency, Barack Obama has failed to take full control over his foreign policy, allowing a bureaucracy shaped by long years of Republican control and spurred on by a neocon-dominated U.S. news media to frustrate many of his efforts to redirect America's approach to the world in a more peaceful direction. Obama deserves a big a dose of the blame for this predicament because he did little to neutralize the government holdovers and indeed played into their hands with his appointments of Hillary Clinton and Robert Gates, to name a few. And then we have the Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs, Victoria Nuland, a holdover from the neocon era, a former top advisor to Dick Cheney. And you probably know by now that the NSA didn't do it, but somebody tapped her phone and released an embarrassing conversation she had with America's ambassador to Ukraine, Jeffrey Pyatt. And that's where she famously said, well, fuck the EU. Now, you probably know the big picture, which is accurately reported by the corporate media. That is that there's a split in the nation of Ukraine. The people in the Far East are aligned with Russia. They speak Russian. The people in the West are much more oriented toward Europe, and Ukrainian is their language. And if we believe the official narratives, this is a battle between the tilt toward Europe versus the age-old relationship with Russia. They were, of course, part of the Soviet Union together. And Putin offered $15 billion in cash and easy access to natural gas, which Ukraine desperately needs. and this has provoked further conflict in that country. But who is it that opposed the Yanukovych government? Some elements made a deal with him overnight, Thursday night, Friday morning, American time. And we were told that there was this uneasy truce. Then the goon squads hit the street. Yanukovych fled the capital, first by helicopter, then by car. He was thought to be going to a summer home in Crimea. And they have lost his trail from the latest news accounts. But let's come back to Victoria Nuland. Bob Perry pointed out something that I didn't know. She is married to a member of the neocon Kagan family. Did you know that? Well, I didn't. Her husband is Robert Kagan. You can Google him or look him up on Wikipedia, and you'll see that the Kagan family, I think Fred is the father, have been long active in conservative politics, part of the plan for a new American century, supporters of all the bad ideas in the Bush-Cheney era. And you may ask yourself, and I will tell you I don't have the answer before you ask yourself, what the hell is Victoria Nuland doing in a Democratic administration? And so Robert Perry does an excellent job of peeling back the conflicting interests in the U.S. foreign policy establishment. And he may even be a little too kind to Barack Obama in suggesting that his orientation is more peaceful and it's just these pesky holdovers who he hasn't been able to squeeze out of the administration who are causing the problems. Here's the power summary in Bob Perry's piece. Ultimately, the Ukrainian unrest over a policy debate whether Ukraine should move toward entering the European Union led to a violent showdown in which neo-fascist stormtroopers battled police, leaving scores dead. To ease the crisis, President Yanukovych agreed to a power-sharing government and to accelerated elections. But no sooner was that agreement signed than the hard-right faction threw it out and pressed for power in an apparent coup. Again, the American neocons had performed the role of the sorcerer's apprentice, unleashing forces and creating chaos that soon was spinning out of control. But this latest regime change, which humiliated Putin, could also do long-term damage to U.S.-Russian cooperation, vital to resolving other important world crises like Iran and Syria. So here's a look at the other side of the coin, and I want you to be open-minded about this and understand the source. It is an official Russian news agency called the Voice of Russia, and they are reporting on alleged statements from anonymous Ukraine. And so I do understand this is an unsourced piece of information that you could easily interpret as propaganda. But I think it's always important to look at what the other side is saying. So, anonymous Ukraine is battling the forces in Ukraine that are funded and directed from the West and attempting to overthrow the democratically elected government of the sovereign country of Ukraine. Anonymous Ukraine is operating in what can only now be described as a war zone, and the security measures they are forced to take are extreme. The anonymous hacktivist collective worldwide is partially divided on the issue of Ukraine. This has to do with the Western mass media propaganda and the conflicting reports that are coming out of the country. This is sad, as some Anons are unknowingly supporting the dark forces at work in Ukraine. Members of Anonymous Ukraine are aware of the internal meddling by the United States, NATO, and the European Union into the internal sovereign affairs of Ukraine. Anonymous Ukraine supports peace and the right of the people to self-determination. The Bandera Nazis and fascist thugs that are beating and killing police and members of the security services do not represent the will or the wishes of the people of Ukraine. Now here I find this quite speculative. They flatly state, quote, the people of Ukraine do not want European Union integration. The people of Ukraine do not want NATO on their territory. The people of Ukraine voted for President Yanukovych to lead them in fair and just democratic elections. Well, I don't know that anybody can really speak for the people of Ukraine right now. But Anonymous Ukraine has released the emails of the leaders of the so-called opposition including Klitschko, Vitali Klitschko, who they describe as a puppet of the West. They threaten to expose more emails if their desires are not addressed. So I think this is interesting to see how it is perceived by other people and other perspectives. But the bottom line for me is that Americans are not getting the complex picture of what's really happening on the ground in Ukraine, and somehow I expect that is likely to continue. Now, a quick comment on the Olympics, which are over after a two-week run, and I want to change my criticism of NBC. At the outset, I said we had to brace ourselves for its jingoistic nationalist coverage. And while I didn't watch every minute every night, I, you know, averaged an hour or two each evening, I came away feeling less oppressed by the nationalism of NBC's coverage of the Olympics. And I want to separate that from the commercials. I don't watch most commercials. I zip through them, but the ones I watched were really full of a lot of patriotic bullshit. But in essence, the coverage, particularly in events where the United States did not have a contender, I thought was more balanced than what I've seen in the past. Now, you notice I said I want to change my criticism. I was really offended. Last night, Sunday, closing night of the Olympics, the ending ceremony, not as dramatic as the opening ceremony, and apparently that's reflected in the ratings. So what did NBC do? They jacked it up by presenting a 75-minute, deeply offensive soap opera replay of the scandal between Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan that occurred 20 years ago. And after I saw what they were doing, I turned the sound down, just waiting, you know, thinking, they won't spend a whole hour on this. Then they spent a whole hour on it. Then they kept going into the second hour. I could not believe it. Now, why would they exploit people's interest in the Olympics with a replay of this sordid episode from 20 years ago? I mean, did Monica Lewinsky turn them down? I know she wasn't an Olympic contender, but it was a salacious story of the same variety. And there were so many great moments for Americans at the Olympics this year that NBC could have recapped, and, you know, they did a great job technically. I love seeing some of the downhill races where they'd show the most recent competitor and then use a video trick to show the leader, and you could see exactly how they went from turn to turn. I thought that was very cool. I always love the Jamaican bobsled team. I can't resist that. But why did NBC go so lowbrow and tabloid on the final night of its Olympics coverage? I don't know the answer, but it must be money and ratings. That is typically the only answer. Well, today we are releasing to our subscribers a one-hour interview with a woman who I am so impressed with. We finally have at least one real progressive Democratic candidate running for the United States Senate this year, and she has a very good shot at it. The state is Maine, where Susan Collins, who's been in four or five terms now, is long of tooth and short of responsiveness. And a young, very attractive, very smart woman named Shenna Bellows is her challenger. Democrats have not opposed Bellows, so she'll run in the primary unopposed, won't have to spend her money defeating a fellow Democrat. And she will face off against Susan Collins this fall. And over the course of our hour-long interview, I hit all of the hot-button points that a progressive like me cares about. And Shenna Bellows did not disappoint. She's a single-payer advocate. She's led the charge for marriage equality in her state of Maine. She believes in flat-out legalization of marijuana. She is totally against nuclear power, fracking, and would be a great voice in the Senate for voting rights, for my definition of religious freedom, which is freedom from the religious views of others. She's for campaign finance reform. She is willing to talk about serious cuts in defense spending. And quite significantly, Shenna Bellows, who spent 8 years as executive director of the ACLU for the state of Maine, is the strongest Democrat I have heard recently in opposition to Obama's wrong-headed policies at the NSA and the massive surveillance that he inherited from Bush and has cemented as the new normal in America today. Listen to this comment from Shenna Bellows.
President Obama's actions on surveillance have been very disappointing, and Congress has failed to place checks and balances on that executive power. It's really up to Congress to reform the laws, to repeal the Patriot Act, to stop the NSA abuses of power, and Congress has abdicated its oversight authority entirely. We can celebrate the good work that Obama does, his call to raise the minimum wage, his work on civil rights and same-sex marriage, and still criticize the issues with which we disagree. And that's, you know, for me, a big one is the issue of NSA spying. I think that that is intellectually honest, and I think it's important to our democracy to have civil dissent and discussion and debate about these issues rather than groupthink.
I hope you'll listen to the full interview with Shenna Bellows. I think it's really important. And I hope you will share the interview and your attitudes about this progressive candidate with your friends on Facebook, Twitter, whatever devices you use. Maybe you're just an email person. Maybe you actually write letters and put a stamp on them. But I really think it's important to identify this progressive candidate and work very hard to get her elected this year. So I hope that you will check out the interview. And if you're not already a subscriber, did you know that you can get a 24-hour pass at peterbcollins.com for $1? That's right. I mean, come on. Almost anybody listening to this podcast can afford to pop a dollar to hear this important interview, and I hope you will. The other opportunities for subscription, $5, $10, $20 a month, whatever fits your budget. The best deal is our $50 annual subscription. And if you're in the continental U.S. and you sign up for a new annual, I've got bonus gifts for you. A bag of kick-ass Kona coffee beans supplied by Russ Archibald on the Big Island of Hawaii. And a CD with great rock and roll music with political messages from John Dist. It's called Red Flag, and I'd like to send it to you with your new annual subscription. And let me be frank with you, the subscription thing is really up and down. And in the last 24 hours, for some reason or whatever reason, four people whose annual subscriptions came up for renewal didn't renew. Now, it's possible they just didn't have enough money in their PayPal account. I do understand. But I share this with you so that you understand that I do rely on my listeners to support this effort. Right now, I'm trying to raise extra money to buy some new audio gear to bring our audio standards back up to par. And so I really need your help. The other thing I'll tell you is we have this offer where you can get a free audiobook download from audible.com if you just take out their 30-day trial. Well, I got the check today for the month of January, and exactly seven of you took the opportunity to click over to Audible and sign up for the free trial subscription. You can cancel that subscription anytime, and you won't have to pay a penny. And I know you have to sign up with your credit card, and some people are allergic to that. But I really need your help. It's a critical time financially here for the Peter B. Collins podcast. So you have opportunities. Subscribe. You can make a flat-out donation to our new equipment fund. The information is on the subscribe page at peterbcollins.com. Or you can support us with the Audible deal that gets me $15, and you get your first audiobook download absolutely free. Now, I want to compare the progressive Senate candidate from Maine, Shenna Bellows, with the nominally Democratic challenger for the United States Senate seat held by Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. Her name is Allison Lundergan Grimes. She is the daughter of an old line Paul in the state of Kentucky. Her daddy was convicted for an ethics law violation back in 1989. The conviction was ultimately overturned, but I'm certain Mitch McConnell is not going to forget about that when he starts to mount his mudslinging against Allison Lundergan Grimes. And let's compare her again to Shenna Bellows. Shenna Bellows opposes fracking, believes climate change is the most serious problem we face. Alison Lundgren Grimes is pro-coal. And when asked about climate change, she said, "Well, I believe that coal keeps the lights on here in Kentucky." Now, I understand how conservative Kentucky is. I grew up just over the river in Ohio. But what good is it to defeat Mitch McConnell if the Democrat who replaces him is as conservative as, say, Mary Landrieu in Louisiana? Now, at least Ms. Grimes supports same-sex marriage, but thinks the states need to decide that, and she supports the right to abortion. So, in my view, she is just barely a Democrat. And that's the best that they've managed to come up with in Kentucky. That's why I think that the race in Maine with Shenna Bellows, that's why the race in Maine with Shenna Bellows is so doggone critical. It pains me to tell you that yesterday was the four-month mark for the illegal incarceration of our colleague Roger Shuler, the journalist and blogger, who remains locked up in the jail in Shelby County, Alabama, for practicing journalism. And it pains me because people appear to have either lost interest or just glazed over. And Roger Shuler didn't belong in jail on day one. And every day that passes adds an outrage to his incarceration. The justice system, such as it is in Alabama, is completely broken. And so it appears the only way for Roger Shuler to win release is through federal court action. And I have spent time trying to recruit lawyers. His wife Carol does it every day. And I implore you, if you are a lawyer, if you know a lawyer who has First Amendment practice skills and who could get involved on a pro bono basis in this important case, please do get in touch. Peter@peterbcollins.com. You remember that movie, Get Shorty? Well, over the weekend, Mexican authorities got Shorty. In Spanish, his name is El Chapo. His given name is Joaquin Guzman Loera. He is described as the drug lord responsible for a great deal of the drug products shipped into the United States, including something like 80% of the cocaine in Chicago. And we're told that he was finally arrested after eluding authorities in many recent attempts. He's even had some plastic surgery to get rid of his twaddle. Is that a waddle or a twaddle, the thing that hangs like a turkey below your chin? I guess that's waddle, sorry. Anyway, we're told that he was finally taken into custody with cooperation from America's DEA, the U.S. Marshals Service, and most likely the NSA, because the very broad hints are that electronic surveillance helped locate Shorty. And I consider this to be a propaganda move, because when I watch that ABC World News, the story about the capture of El Chapo played ahead of the story about the change of government, the coup, in Ukraine. And they sure wanted to let us know that the surveillance that I am so deeply opposed to, it's one of the reasons they caught this guy, and it's supposed to soften us up, right? Well, here we have a negative story about the NSA that did not come from Edward Snowden. Isn't that fresh? The NSA has stepped up its surveillance. By the way, the source of this is the Reuters International News Agency. NSA has stepped up surveillance of senior German government officials since being ordered by Barack Obama to halt its spying on Chancellor Angela Merkel's personal phones. According to the newspaper, I think it's a newspaper, Bild am Sonntag, It said its information stemmed from a high-ranking NSA employee in Germany, and that those being spied on include Interior Minister Thomas de Maizière, that's not a very German name, a close confidant of Merkel. According to the unnamed NSA employee, quote, "We have had the order not to miss out on any information now that we are no longer able to monitor the Chancellor's communication directly." And the mass circulation newspaper said the NSA is monitoring 320 people in Germany, mostly politicians, but also business leaders. One of the other hotspots we've been following is in Venezuela, where the Maduro government remains in power, but protests continue. And once again, the American media gives us a very one-sided view that Maduro, who was elected by the people about a year ago following the death of Hugo Chavez, is a bad guy because he's a Chavez supporter. He has anti-American sentiments. He doesn't forget that in 2002, the Bush administration was part of a coup attempt against Chavez. There's a lot of anti-American sentiment that is well justified in Venezuela. Well, John Kerry, our Secretary of State, says that the crackdown on protest by the Maduro government is unacceptable. And without naming Leopoldo Lopez, the opposition leader who was jailed by the Maduro government last week, Kerry indicated that he supports the opposition leader. Now, what is the opposition in Venezuela? If you look at the television pictures, it seems like it's led by a group of students. And there are students involved. But this guy, Leopoldo Lopez, is fronting for the dictatorial forces and the Banana Republic leaders who were in power before Hugo Chavez back in the 1990s. And that's the element in Venezuela that it appears our government is supporting. Have you been able to pick that up from your, you know, reading or viewing or listening about this conflict in Venezuela? I would doubt it. Meanwhile, in Egypt, the military dictatorship is cementing its power. They had a puppet prime minister who was installed when the coup that America still can't call a coup occurred last July 3rd in Cairo. And the generals forced out the elected leader, Mohamed Morsi, claiming that it was democracy in action because there had been a lot of protests. So today, the surprise announcement was that the government of the interim prime minister, Hazem El Beblawi, has announced its resignation, the entire cabinet. And this is, we believe, intended to clear the way for now Field Marshal, formerly General, Abdul Fattah el-Sisi, the defense minister, the dominant figure in the government, and clearly the next Mubarak, the next Mubarak in Egypt. And this is another case where the United States is operating as a back-channel power source. We continue to support this authoritarian regime that is squelching the rights of Muslims in the nation of Egypt. And as you know, I believe that that ultimately won't work, and that Sisi is going to face the same probable end as Mubarak. We just learned that Boeing, one of the biggest defense contractors, they also make civilian airliners, paid zero federal income tax in 2013. And your first reaction, well, maybe they didn't make any money. Nope. Profits were just a couple of hairs under $6 billion, $5.9 billion to be precise. And not only did Boeing pay no tax, they got a refund of $82 million. That's right, you and I are subsidizing Boeing. We pay taxes in, they take a big refund out. And Boeing defends this as saying, well, you know, These are deferred taxes because we have so many capital expenses when we're building a new airliner or a new drone for the U.S. government. But the truth is that they continue to defer these taxes. And over at the Center for Effective Government, an analyst named Gardner said, deferral technically means that you're postponing tax, that this tax will be paid someday. They essentially are shifting taxes forward indefinitely. Don't you wish we could do that? I mean, April 15th is almost here. I'd like to defer my taxes until Boeing pays its taxes. You know, I'd be in jail before Boeing ever pays its taxes. Piers Morgan, history. And why did it take CNN so long to figure out that even though Larry King was over the hill, that it was actually worse to replace him with this British little twerp, a guy connected to the hacking scandals when he was editor of a newspaper that competed with the Murdoch chain, a guy who gave softball questions and tabloid interests a bad name. You know, the kind of guy who would add Lady Gaga. And I like Lady Gaga, okay, and there's no problem. CNN's allowed to put entertainers on its primetime interview show. But he'd sandwich Lady Gaga in with a Secretary of State or some important, you know, really important newsmaker interview. And you could never tell which one Piers thought was the important one. Finally today, we wish a fond farewell to a funny man named Harold Ramis. I first saw Harold Ramis in the early 1970s at the comedy group in Chicago called Second City. That's where we got Bill Murray, John Belushi, and many other early cast members at Saturday Night Live. Ramis wrote and directed Ghostbusters, Groundhog Day, and was involved in many other wacky films like Animal House, Meatballs, Caddyshack, Stripes. And while these will not be remembered as the most elegant or important films of all time, they were very entertaining. Harold Ramis was a man who knew how to make us laugh. Thank you, dude. I ain't afraid of no ghost. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters! If you're all alone, pick up the phone and call.
Unless you just want some more, I think you better come.